Are you ready?
Okay. I will call us to order this morning on our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors member meeting, July 1st, 2014. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public comment, number one. This period, comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. We've got a request here from Bill Rudolph. Do you want to wait until the topic actually comes up on the agenda, or do you want to speak about it now? Okay, if you want to come up here to the table, that'd be great, and then we can get you on the microphone. And this is in regards to the Cameron Pines item that's on our agenda today.
Okay.
Cameron Estates, exactly. Yes.
My name is Bill Rudolph, and I live on a property adjoining Cameron Estates. And I have some concern about the possible effect of the runoff from that project onto not only my own property, but properties that are out in Hickory Hills, at least some of the properties. Just as an example, there is a small stream that comes down behind my house, and I have a deck that goes out almost to that stream. And I'm concerned that because of the increased water that's going to come down there, at least what I believe to be the increased water, that will erode that, causing the structure, that is the deck, to be unstable. So I have a concern about that. Now, it's my understanding that sometime in the past, recent past, that this Board of Supervisors has been presented with that problem by Friedrich, who is the developer, and he had Fox Engineering give some insight into that particular problem. Now, I'm not sure whether that statement I just made is true or not, because I wasn't here, but I heard about it after the fact. And what I would like to know is, what is the situation there regarding the runoff? What safeguards have been taken? What recourse do I, as well as other people in Hickory Hills, have with this potential problem? So that's why I'm here.
Okay. We've got the representative from Fox here today, and when this item comes up on the agenda, we can ask him to address those concerns. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is the consideration of minutes from 6/24/14.
And I'll move approval.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Any additions or corrections? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The minutes are approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Any anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The personnel actions have been approved. Consideration of claims.
I will move approval for claims.
Second.
Motion to second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The claims have been approved. Consent agenda. Looks like we need to add some road closures.
I don't think.
1447, 1448, 1449, a couple of utility permits, 1455 and 1456.
48, 49, 50.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
A motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Aye. Got ahead of myself a little bit.
Yeah.
That takes us down to additional items. Discussion and consideration of proposal from Communication Innovators to sort and label fiber connections at the Justice Center Administration Building and the Human Resource Building for $8,351.28. IT Director Barbara Steinbeck. Morning, Barb.
Good morning.
Excuse me.
This quote that we asked Communication Innovators to prepare for us will label and identify the connections at the three buildings, and it will also give us a Visio document of the switch racks there and route pictures of where each connection goes. This is something we currently do not have. If you go in there, it's just kind of a toss-up, unless you remember when you toned out the last connection where it went to, you don't know where anything goes. It causes a lot of issues when we're troubleshooting. It takes more time to figure out where everything is. So with this labeled and the Visio diagrams for us, it will make our lives much easier. And really, it's the way it should have been. And this is not something that's just happened recently. It's been that way for a long time. So it's time to get everything documented.
Barb, is this something that once we catch up and get everything documented that you and your staff will be able to stay on top of, where we won't have to come back and do this every time we make changes? I mean, because to me it seems like, okay, let's get everything labeled now, but then anytime there's an addition or a change, we want to have it labeled at the time that that happens.
It's been my experience whenever somebody runs a connection in that it should be labeled, it just hasn't been reinforced. Okay. And so, you know, moving forward, anytime there's any changes, I will make sure that's part of the quote, but this will just catch us up.
Yeah, and for me, it makes perfect sense to me that we would catch us up, but I do want to reinforce that we don't want to get in this situation again.
Definitely, I agree. And we have approached, and it's kind of a unique situation there where we have vendors from the ICN, from DOT, from the state coming in and running connections. So, you know, they aren't all real good at that. We did contact or speak with one of the vendors and asked, you know, what would it take for you to do this? And, you know, some head scratching and, well, I don't know, I'd have to do a lot of digging. Since Communication Innovators has done a lot of the cabling and has had to identify them to do other jobs, we felt they would be the best one to do this for us.
Absolutely. But so that I'm clear, we maintain control of all our server rooms and everything else. So when there's a change made, it's us providing access to whoever's making the changes. Is that right or wrong?
That is not correct.
Okay, who else has access besides
The IT person for the state offices, like the clerk of court, secondary courts, NOAA, he has access to that room. Any vendors that we bring in have to report to us first, so right. We can let them in, and facilities will give them a vendor card if they need to be in and out at several times. But no, we are not the only ones with access.
Okay. Well, then it seems to me that we, as the supervisors and in control of all of our buildings and things like that, we just need to make sure that we lay out there anybody who is in these rooms doing anything. We need everything labeled.
Right.
Because, like I say, you know, the $8,300 now, it makes sense to me that we've got to catch up and it's a little complex. I just don't want to get 5 years down the road and now we've got a jumble again when it seems to me we could just keep track as we're going.
Sure. And yeah, to their credit, the state's equipment is well labeled.
Okay.
Because they don't want us touching their stuff, and I don't blame them.
Yeah.
And I do recall about 8 years ago we did have a vendor come in and do some work unbeknownst to us. And and Al Hahn at that time, you know, when he found out about it, you know, we, you know, had a little bit of a sit-to with them regarding contacting us and making sure that things were done. But I think what had already happened, they had already started putting in, you know, the necessary cabling. So I think this process would be something that should be done right up front, and I certainly thank you for taking a close look at that. I'm not sure if all of the other have we had a opportunity to do similar inspections in some of our other buildings where we have similar types of communication where things may or may not necessarily be labeled.
Well, this quote would cover the Justice Center, the Admin Building, and HSC,
both
levels.
Great.
So,
great.
What's this do for your budget?
I do have money I didn't use last year that I'm going to assign the funds for this.
Okay.
Lisa said that I could send an email and she would assign those funds that I can use for this. I do have money budgeted for other projects I could use within this fiscal year. I'd rather not.
Yeah, just keep us posted on this. I mean, this is a very important step that needs to be taken.
I move approval of the proposal by Communication Innovators to sort and label our fiber connections.
Good. Second.
Motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved. Next, discussion and consideration proposal from Central Iowa Broadband to provide increased internet bandwidth between the Justice Center and the Administration Building.
Again.
Been talking about broadband for a long time.
So I'll be here for a little while. This proposal, if you recall, 2 years ago, we had a 10-meg connection with Windstream that we upgraded to a 20-meg. It was only in the last few months that they were able to actually upgrade that. This was a product they weren't familiar with. Unfortunately, Windstream was the only one in the area at the time who could offer increased bandwidth to us. Since that time, it has been up and down. It hasn't been steady, and we have outgrown it. However, this is the largest product Windstream can sell us. Since then, Central Iowa Broadband has moved into our area. They're very aggressive. They're bringing up new markets, and they have submitted a proposal for a 100-meg connection, which is five times more than what we currently have, at a cost that is relatively the same that we're paying for our 20-meg, depending on what they've quoted us here is the three different options, the monthly, the three-year contract, or the five-year contract. We do get constant calls from Justice Center. It seems like everything we're doing now is moving toward the internet. EDMS is taking a huge chunk out of our bandwidth. Mm-hmm. The Sheriff's Office does a lot of training online. Even just trying to get on and do some research has been an issue lately. So I think this is something that we need to move toward. I've got all confidence in Central Iowa Broadband. We've met with them several times, and they really know what they're doing.
And when you say that it's comparable to what we're spending now for the 20 meg, are you telling me that you would not need any kind of budget amendment to do this? This would just be entering an agreement with a different provider?
There would be some overlap, not a lot. It does take time to migrate your IP addresses off the old connection onto the new. I believe that contract is over in October. So for a while, we'd have both.
And what are we spending per month? I don't think that's proprietary.
$1,500.
Okay.
And for the Windstream connection.
Right.
Okay. And this one's going to be comparable. So you're telling me that for 3 months, we're going to be paying double.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This will take us completely away from Windstream.
Yes. Unless we want to keep them as a backup internet connection, which their connection is a T1. Basically, what I'm proposing here is fiber.
Yeah, and we're moving away
much
from
more
that.
Stable, yeah. A lot easier to handle the different traffic, the flux of incoming and outgoing. So,
Barb, you'll take care of this out of your budget, and then we'll have a conversation in the spring if budget numbers get tight for you. Is
sure.
That right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
I'll move approval of the proposal from Central Iowa Broadband.
Second.
Mm-hmm. We have a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Discussion and consideration of proposal from Central Iowa Broadband to provide fiber bandwidth for Hickory Grove and McFarland Park to the Justice Center.
This is a continuation, or should I say a revision, of the contract that I brought to you in March that was approved. The difference between this is now it includes Hickory Grove. And at that time, fiber was not possible at Hickory Grove. And now it is. And with this proposal, Hickory Grove would have 10 meg, and Conservation would have 20 meg, which is equal to the connection that we use just for our internet. So it improves their connectivity with the phones and the additional staff and the GIS. It's something that they need to do.
Remind me, in regards to McFarland Park, at one time we were talking about having to do a microwave connection.
Yes, this would replace
just
that.
Remind me. Okay, so this would replace the microwave. It gets us to full fiber. all the way from McFarland, and now we get to include Hickory Grove? What kind of cost?
Well, the cost, I'm not sure if you got a copy of these.
I'm sure it's in the
okay.
in this pack. But
Once again, it's the month-to-month, 3-year, 5-year, but we're looking at, for the two together, for McFarland Park would be $6.95 a month. I would prefer the 3-year contract. And for the Hickory Grove, it would be $4.56.
And what do we spend?
$4.56, you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do we spend for the microwave connection? Is that's how we've handled McFarland up till this point?
No. Up to this point, we've just had a T1 with CenturyLink.
Okay.
Our portion of it is $305 a month. I do know that McFarland spends money out of their budget as well. Our matching fund is $305 through CenturyLink. But that's for not even a 1-meg connection.
Right. And will we be able to do away with that T1, or will we have to keep it?
We'll be able to do away with that. We will not need to consider the microwave connection. That was, once again, before Central Iowa Broadband was in the picture, and we didn't have any other options, but we wanted them to bring them onto our network.
Okay. So, is this a comparable cost to what the microwave would have cost us?
Do we know
that?
This is a lot less. The microwave, we had, I believe, a $25,000 installation cost, and then depending on what bandwidth we chose, there would be a monthly cost. This wasn't available then, and this is special pricing that they have given us, so which is why it was considered proprietary. The reason we're getting a lot of this stuff from Central Iowa Broadband so cheaply is they were contracted to run fiber for the Nevada schools, and they brought their fiber right down past there into the Justice Center, so it wasn't a lot out of their way, and they had fiber going past McFarland anyway. And they have brought in, if you're going to do it, you do it with future in mind. So they did bring in extra strands in case in the future we ever want to increase it. So,
you mentioned the improvement as far as phones for staff and GIS capabilities and other things. With this type of connectivity, would this enhance the general public being able to access broadband access from either one of the facilities there?
They would, I don't see it so much at Hickory Grove, but they would have it at Conservation for the wireless.
Yeah. And I guess that was the question.
Yes.
And since Mike is here in the audience, do we ever see this as a future possibility of something that you'd want to have more in a campground type of facility, some type of internet connectivity? And if that ever became a reality, to add something, to expand that type of service, if you have a facility in place, how much more challenging would that be based upon the fact that they do have the connectivity running into that area?
We have discussed that option. Central Iowa Broadband suggests turning to INS for that, because they have a tower right there at near the campground that would be able to provide wireless for the campers much easier than we could.
Okay. Well, we don't know for sure what the future is going to hold, but we certainly know that there's going to be increased use of our camping in the future as we upgrade our facilities. And even though folks love the outdoors, many of them still do have cell capabilities and want to connect when at all possible. And this might be a type of amenity as we look at maybe, hopefully someday, my vision would be is that funding would be such that we could put some additional cabin sites out there, you know, which would really enhance that area. So,
a beautiful location.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Didn't need a comment, Mike, but I just thought about that after I saw you sitting there thinking about some of the future plans and goals the Conservation Board might have, you know, when it comes to this.
Well, all of this makes sense to me. I like that we're saving money over what we thought we were going to have to do with the microwave, and I'm really appreciative that this is a Story County company based in Colo that we're able to do business with. And so I'll move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Barb.
You're welcome.
Yeah. You sure you don't want to stay? Okay.
Well.
Next, discussion and consideration of
revisions.
Mm-hmm. Revisions to the general assistance policies and procedures effective 7/1/14. Deb Childreth.
Deb, it feels like we're finally starting to get there.
Yes.
The state is actually letting us move a little, huh?
Yes, exactly. Today is the formal day of regions for mental health and disability services, so we're moving forward in that. Our transition plan was approved. We received word on that yesterday from DHS, so now we're working some more on our regional management plan and our budget and service plan.
Outstanding.
So, yeah.
And, Board, you all may not be aware that we did have a change in our admin team yesterday in Central Iowa Community Service Area, and we're looking at the new chair of that particular group and a CIO for communication, and she's taken over John Grush's role for this next calendar year, so it should be an exciting time for us.
Just another demonstration that the region knows what they're doing.
And I will add, since you brought that up, Wayne, that today also marks my 24th year of employment with Story County.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
Lots of things happening today.
Congratulations. So. Congratulations, and
all
thank
right.
you.
Well, thank you.
I could use a McFlurry if you want a treat.
I'll meet you at noon. But today I'm here for revisions that we've made to our general assistance manual. This is something that I work with staff on every couple of years just to make sure we're in check with policies and procedures and adjusting practices according to what's going on with the population that we serve through this program as well as the other agencies that we collaborate with. And so we just have a few minor changes. We cleaned up some of our terminology to make it more current with what's out there in the human services world today. So instead of food stamps, it's now a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, Medicaid rather than Title 19, although that is used interchangeably, the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan, the state and federal insurance exchanges, that kind of thing. We've made sure that we had that language updated in this manual. We've also more clearly defined the definition of family, especially where it pertains to adults, adult children, or other adults that live in the family household. We have extended family members that are oftentimes living with the families as they come in and apply for assistance, so we wanted to clearly define that language. And then one stipulation that we did remove is what we refer to in our office as the one-year letter, and that is when an individual has made application three times within a six-month period through our office, we gave them what we called a one-year letter so they weren't able to return for 12 months, because we saw that that kind of frequency seemed to be in line with a consistent use of our services, and general assistance is not meant to be an ongoing assistance. It's there to help people in times of emergency need and that kind of thing. And we did remove that one-year letter language from the manual. The reason for that is we've seen a decrease in the letters that we were sending out to individuals. People, and this also coincides with what other agencies are doing in terms of housing and utility assistance. A lot of those other agencies are now going to just assisting on a one-year basis versus multiple times during the year. We are still offering assistance every 6 months if that's what's needed in the person's life. And we're also approaching things a little bit differently with the staff who work with those clients. Nikki Lullman and Kathy Johnson are using more of a social work case management approach in sitting down with individuals and really figuring out what it is they need and what are the longer-term solutions for those individuals, instead of always relying on the short-term assistance programs. So coupling all of that together, we felt that it was a good way to remove that one letter requirement, but then spend more time with the applicants and working with them on finding more longer-term self-sustaining answers to their household issues.
And so that I'm hearing correctly, we're not changing our philosophy that general assistance is not intended as an ongoing mechanism. It's intended as a lift up.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. And I think, you know, in working as collaboratively as we do with ERP and Good Neighbors and the churches around the county, there's a lot of communication going back and forth. And one of the things that we've talked about, we're not near where we would like to be, is coming up with some kind of a database that we can all enter information into so we can just pull a person's name up when they come in for assistance and see if they've been to these other agencies. I think that would cut down time on phone calls and emails, excuse me, and that kind of thing, and just be a more efficient way of tracking individuals' utilization of those kinds of services. But we're not quite there yet, but we continue to have those discussions. The other thing that we changed in the manual was around the funeral assistance. We would always put a dollar amount in the manual, and we chose not to do that because it changes based on the board's decisions during the budget session. So we just changed that language to read that it would be the amount as approved through the Story County Board of Supervisors. So that just clarified that a little bit.
And where are we at currently for assistance?
We kept it the same as fiscal year 13. I think it's 1805. And that can be utilized for either a traditional funeral service or cremation and a service associated with a cremation. Mm-hmm. And I know the VA tries to keep it the same as our program as well. Are there any questions or comments on the manual? And I want to publicly recognize staff in my office that assisted with this. We've been working on it for about 3 months now, and they're the ones that visit with the clients firsthand and see the situations and talk with the agency. So it's very important to have their input and guidance on this as well.
Deb, when was the last time you went through a full-fledged revision of this?
It's been 2 years.
2 years, about 2 to 3.
Yeah, I did come to the board last fall, and we took out we were requiring individuals to sign up with workforce development, and that was becoming a cumbersome process because we no longer have a workforce development office, so they have to go and find a kiosk to do that. And while people were trying their best to do that, some of the limitations with that is you have to then set up an account, and they were either going to the library or Salvation Army to do that, and they weren't really following up after they set up that account. They did it for the purposes of getting our assistance, but then not necessarily checking in on a regular basis as far as any job postings they were. We still have people do a job search, and that requires them to go to businesses to apply, so we still require that. But we removed the part about requiring them to register with workforce development. We encourage them to do that and tell them that's still an option, but it's not a requirement. But that was the last change that we made, but in overall look, it's been a couple of years.
Okay. I move approval of the revisions to the General Assistant Policies and Procedures Manual.
Second.
Motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Those revisions have been approved. Thanks, okay. Deb.
Thank you.
Next, consideration of Resolution 1503 to accept a donation of land from the Army Corps of Engineers and fund the Corps' associated disposal costs. Mike Cox. Morning, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll keep this brief. This is good news.
Long time coming.
Long time coming. As you guys are aware, Conservation Board has been working on this for, I want to say, decades, on acquiring this roughly 200 acres from the Army Corps. That 200 acres is, of course, what was originally purchased by the Corps for the interstate right away, and then when the interstate got diverted to the east for the Ames Reservoir project, this current right away was no longer needed. Well, so we've been working for quite some time locally and with our representatives or legislators in Washington, D.C. to get a resolve to this. So I want to give credit where credit is due right now. We got some renewed dialogue, and thank you to Supervisor Sanders for assisting with getting this dialogue going, and Jessica Reynolds with our attorney's office, again, for getting this going. So the Corps...
We need to remember Steve Holmes in that, too. He was an integral... He had the conversation that I think really kicked all this off.
So yeah, I want to thank everyone for helping with this. So tremendous news. Now the Corps is willing to move this project forward. Of course, they haven't had funding to do their disposal processes. This land will be and has to be conveyed to Story County at no cost. That was one of our successes back in 2008 federal budget bill that our legislator Latham got in place, and so thank him for that. So, but the Corps hadn't been able to do anything until anything because the funding was not there to carry that out. So the surveying that's necessary, the real estate costs that's necessary to follow their federal land disposal processes. So now they are willing to move forward with that. They want Story County's they want to know our willingness to accept that property and our willingness to work with them and negotiate that amount that that the disposal costs will be. So the resolution that you have in front of you states that yes, Story County is willing to accept this property and that we are willing to work with the Corps to establish what that funding level is and negotiate that amount and that it would be pending successful negotiation would be funding coming from Story County to the Corps to fund that project.
Mike, would you mention the special meeting of the Conservation Board that discussed this and then approved the recommendation and forwarded it to the Board of Supervisors?
Yes, thank you. We did have a special meeting when we got this word last week that the Corps was willing to entertain this. So we did have a special meeting of the Conservation Board last Friday afternoon, and the Conservation Board did unanimously support and recommend that the supervisors pass this resolution.
And this all came together at the end really, really quickly. I think it's important to go back and point out that in 2008, when this was put into the part of the language of the federal budget, it gave the Army Corps of Engineers 180 days from that point to get this done, and here we are 6 years later still trying to figure it out. It always is interesting to me when something – I think the intention in 2008 was that this ground, it belongs with Story County. It just does. It really helps conservation in terms of some of the things we're trying to do with our green belt along the Skunk River and some of the items in there. I think at that – when it was passed back in 2008, there truly was an intent that it would come to Story County at no cost. The reality is now the ground is coming to us at no cost, but there's going to be some cost involved – with making the transfer, and that's all going to fall to Story County depending on where it's negotiated out. But the Corps has maintained steadfastly through this whole thing that, you know, budget times are tight and they don't have the money to do the transfer. I think this is a great thing for Story County. Mike, I'm really appreciative to you for your leadership and work in this. Like I say, I think it was 3 weeks ago when we all sat down and met. I just happened to be out in D.C. the next week and mentioned it to a couple people out there who I am highly appreciative that our delegation from Iowa really got going on this and I think put a little pressure on the Corps to do something. Because if I'm not mistaken, the Corps had been reluctant to let Story County pay the transition cost, and now all of a sudden they've done a 180 on that. I'm concerned that if we don't go ahead and do something, that it could easily change back the other way.
Well, I just think your analysis and summation of it, I think, is accurate. And certainly the visit that you had with our congressional delegation was very pivotal. I know over a year ago when I went out, we mentioned it again. They were still trying to do some networking, but we didn't have all of the delegation on board at that point in time. So I think timing made a big difference, and so I appreciate the facilitation that was used this time around. I think it's important for us to understand that the funding aspect, once it's negotiated and finalized, was a non-budgeted item, something that we had not anticipated, but the long-term value and benefit to Story County means that we should do due diligence in addressing, you know, how we will be able to match, you know, come up with those necessary funds to make this transfer become viable. And I think that we will be able to do that successfully. But I think it's important that we do acknowledge that this is one of those unusual type of situations that happen outside of the regular budget, but it's something that we do have the capabilities of making some adjustments and moving forward. So whether we'll continue to work with you, Mike, your conservation department, hopefully there still could be some outside donations, grant dollars, other types of things that may not necessarily be present today, but could be applied for it in terms of the future. So those are things that will have to be talked about as we move forward. But I think I certainly, as a member of the liaison with the Conservation Board, I would strongly endorse the resolution and ask the supervisors to adopt the resolution 1503 to accept the donation of land from the Army Corps of Engineers as presented.
And I'll second that. And Mike, my question is, ultimately, once this is negotiated by Jessica and Stephen Holmes and we figure out what it's going to cost us, are there any stipulations coming with the ground? I know there were some potential archaeological things we had to do. Is there any kind of stipulation with that, or does it fall now to Story County Conservation once we assume ownership?
No, I think there will be some things that we'll have to sort out through that process. So through the disposal process, part of that is archaeological surveying.
Yep.
Depending on the results of the surveys, there may be some sites that yes, we do have to protect via some kind of legal instrument, easement, et cetera. So there may be some sites on the land that do have to be protected, but I think all of that will be evident through the disposal process.
Okay. Well, I would just ask that we move as expeditiously as we can. My fear is that until it's done, the rug can get yanked out from under us. So I'd like to see us get to the end of this thing.
This resolution doesn't bind. I mean, the $150,000 isn't a magic number.
No.
This simply binds a county to a commitment to accept the ground and work with the Corps to try to establish what kind of transfer funds.
Absolutely.
And that $150 is an estimate based on what the Corps presented, their projections of the transfer cost would
yeah.
be.
A few years ago, so right. It couldn't be changed. Okay.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot, aye. Resolution 1503 has been adopted. Thanks,
good.
Mike.
Mike, good job.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next, consideration of development agreement for Cameron Estate Subdivision, Charlie DeSalle. Morning, Charlie.
Morning, Charlie.
Charlie?
How are you guys doing?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Good. If you don't mind, what I'm going to do actually is just kind of discuss the next two agenda items, and then when it comes to actually taking action on the board, that's when you'll just want to separate the two, because the next two items are related to each other, so it's kind of pointless to talk about the first one without mentioning portions of the second one. So, first of all, on the development agreement, I'll just go over that real quick and then show how it relates back to this project. If you go through the development agreement, the developer is providing an irrevocable letter of credit in the amount of $863,000, which should cover the cost. It's actually 130% of the cost of the estimated cost of the improvement. That irrevocable letter of credit is in the county's hand. It is actually down in the treasurer's office now, so we do have possession of that. And that amount was approved by Darren Moon, who did look over those estimates that I believe I did attach to that item.
And I did get an email from the treasurer that letter is in the safe. So,
okay. Looking at number three there, that all improvements to the road shall be constructed in accordance with the county subdivision street specifications. About 2 months ago now, the developer did provide us with a set of construction plans to both me and Darren. Both of us have reviewed those, and both of us are okay with those plans, and they are in conformance with all our regulations. Darren did make one note on that, and I believe I did make mention of that. That the new driveways that are coming off 505th would have to get driveway permits, and he did note through his drainage review on this that those permits have been secured and all that is taken care of now. So, lastly, on number six, where it talks about the warranting of the improvements for a period of 2 years, we have talked with the developer on that. They are providing bonds for what will be the bonds for the paving and the pipe work and the grading of the project. They are in the process of getting those bonds in hands right now, but as a few of the contracts still have not been signed, as they're kind of waiting for this approval to go forward. We don't have those, but the agreement does state that we do need those, so we will get those when the time does come. Going on to the actual final plat that you're looking at, as you are aware, we did approve the preliminary plat back in February. The date was February 11th. There was a handful of conditions that were attached to that approval, most of which dealt with the wastewater treatment systems that would be put in place on this property. The wastewater evaluations have been done for each individual lot. We do have a copy of that downstairs. I didn't include it with your packet just because it was about 40-some pages. But Margaret Janes has looked all that over, and she is on board with all of it, and she has approved all of it and is satisfied with what has been done. We did ask for one revision of the covenants that were initially submitted. The covenants were attached to your agenda packet, so those are the covenants that are final, well, will be final when it is recorded. But again, Margaret is on board with that language and those covenants and how it relates to the maintenance of those wastewater systems. As far as conformance to the preliminary plat that you did approve, we did note that for the most part everything is in conformance. There was a few minor tweaks to some lot sizes that we noted, but absolutely nothing that goes away from the concept that was initially presented. So we see absolutely no problem with those few minor tweaks. As far as the open space requirements, Story County does have a 15% open space requirement and still is in line with that. Looking at the road and easement dedication, if you look in the consent and dedication that is being provided by the developer, they will be dedicating what is Lot C, which is the right-of-way of 505th and 190th, the existing right-of-way. That will be deeded over to Story County. The other two road lots, which are going to be the new subdivision lots, those are going to be dedicated to the public for public use. That's pretty common with how we handle subdivisions. We don't want title to those roads as we don't maintain them. So there's a handful of easements that are being dedicated to the county. Initially, there was a little bit of concern on our end from that, but we have discussed that with Jessica Reynolds, and as long as there isn't any mention in the easement documentation that the upkeep and maintenance of those easements is on the county, she was comfortable in accepting the dedication of those easements. They were utility easements. There was one pocket easement that was requested by CenturyLink, some drainage easements, and then some shared driveway easements off 505th. Other than that, I think I've covered everything else that was in the report that we handed. As far as the phasing of this, you'll recall when we did approve the preliminary plat that it was initially supposed to be in three phases. Just with how the everything has been going the last few months with this, they're combining the first two phases of this project in this final plat. So ultimately there will be this final plat, and then some point in the future there will be another final plat that will take care of that what was supposed to be third phase. We did note in here that the preliminary plat is set to expire on February 11th of 2015, so if that next plat does not come in before then, we'll work with the developer to get an extension, preferably granted on that. So if there's any additional questions at this point, I guess, of me on the plat, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yeah, I would just ask that before we ask the developer and the engineer to come up and talk through, just remind us, I do recall that we went through some of the drainage concerns. I know we talked to some homeowners that live, I think, on the other side of the stream that you're talking about that runs down to Squaw Creek. And so I know this was something we talked about early in the process. Can you just kind of give us a background on that?
Yep. First of all, just kind of starting out with the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, and this area is in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, although the City of Ames does not have a subdivision authority in this area just based off the designation. There's a set of natural areas that we implemented in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. There are a little bit of natural areas on this property, and the developer has protected all those natural areas on this property through outlots. There are assortment of outlots on this property, which for the most part, I think most of them are for the stormwater management. I would go to the developer on asking exactly the type of plantings and everything that will take in place on those. Talking with the developer, it was always their opinion that current conditions being a farm field, the runoff from that farm field will be greater than what it'll be after this, once this is all done, mainly with those outlots and hopefully capturing a lot of that stormwater and slowing down the stormwater off of the property into those other areas. So our regulations do note that they need to meet and exceed both the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and SUDA standards on the project. And again, in reviewing the construction plans that we've gotten, we were comfortable that it was doing that.
Thank you.
We could have Scott Renault come up and maybe address Mr. Rudolph's concern about the additional or possibility of additional runoff.
Good morning.
Scott.
Scott Renault, Fox Engineering. As Charlie discussed, is when you take what has been a farm field and convert it to really low-density housing, which these are minimum one-acre lots, is the amount of runoff from the development actually decreases. And when you look at how we control the runoff from the sites as well, we put it through culverts and tiles and restrict it. And so everything generally gets slowed down and actually even gets cleaned up, because we do have 15% natural areas, so the water runs through those areas, gets filtered out before it leaves the site. In the one corner of the area, we do have a depression that we've put in to cut down the amount of stormwater that's going that direction. That area is just a depression that will grade out and along with all the natural areas and fringe areas get seeded down to native grasses.
So that'll become, in heavy rain events, that'll become kind of a wet area.
That'll be a wet area when it rains heavily like it's been doing, yeah.
Right.
But the rest of the subdivision really is just everything gets routed through these green spaces and whatnot. So,
are you familiar with the area that Mr.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. I mean, the issue that you typically have is all of the development in Hickory Hills they've planted trees and let trees grow along the riverbanks. Trees are not particularly good at holding riverbanks. They shade out the grass that kind of holds things together, and so typically you get a little bit more erosion, I believe, when you have trees that are growing right up next to your riverbank, and that's pretty indicative of things going, getting a little bit more erosion. If it was grass or some other method of stabilization, then I think you wouldn't have that issue. So, and that's part of just Hickory Hills being kind of a mature subdivision that's been around for a while. I mean, at one time was not as treated as it is now, so.
So I think I
was envision an increase in the amount of water that's.
No, I actually would anticipate a decrease both in rate and in the amount.
You mentioned in relationship to a creek or a stream nearby where his particular deck is, and are you familiar with
that
flow of water and so forth?
Right.
Is there any type of I'm just saying, if I was a property owner owning that land and I had some concerns, is there an opportunity to work with that individual, or have there ever been a way to talk about what are some type of additional safeguards that an individual property owner might want to take to lessen possible further erosion that could happen over time? It may take several years, but it certainly with heavy rainfalls and other things, we know that there could be some erosion take place. Could you speak to that at all?
I'll speak a little bit in the background as well. We've just like this year, we've seen lots of years with really heavy runoff And really what we are seeing just kind of a change in the general hydrology, because we are having years with extremely wet weather and prolonged wet weather. And it's hard on the stream channels and whatnot. As part of any project, or as a part of anybody that's in the county, I would call it a free service, because I don't charge for it, I'll come out and review the site and give recommendations on how to improve the erosion. I do that for lots that are not next to my subdivisions as well. So it's just a matter of a phone call and the willingness to meet some evening. So gladly do that.
Yeah. So, and just so that I'm clear, Scott, so if the concern of the Rudolphs is that there's going to be some major erosion, which is ultimately going to impact the structure, I think he said it was a deck that comes up closest thing, one of the services you provide is to come out and take a look at it and let him know what kind of danger that is and what he could do to mitigate it?
Sure, absolutely.
Rudolph, anything else that we can address for you this morning?
Can you come to the microphone?
Back to the microphone, please.
Because we record these.
While he's moving to the microphone, Scott, is ultimately, when I look at this map, should I be picturing, you know, 15, 20 years down the road, that this subdivision will look much like Hickory Hills does today?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Always plant trees, and it gets denser over time, and Hickory Hills, I believe, is a 1970s version subdivision. So it's been around for 40 years, and the trees are getting pretty large.
But these are similar size lots.
No, actually, these lots are larger than Hickory Hills.
Okay.
Hickory Hills has some lots even down to half acre. And I don't think they have – there's a few larger lots in there, but the majority of the lots are less than 1 acre, and we have a 1 acre minimum here.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, my expertise is not in runoff. I'm not an engineer. I'm a mathematician. And one thing that concerns me is that right now we've had a lot of rain.
Uh-huh.
And the stream behind our house does have a lot of water in it. But in 1993, there was a lot more water than there was out there now. When a house gets set or gets developed on a 1 acre plot, where the water used to go, where the house now exists, the water would sink down into the ground. But now you have, in effect, concrete there with the driveway, the footprint for the house, and so forth. So essentially you have a lot less space for that water to get down into, which would mean that perhaps the velocity of the water, maybe even more water, would be coming down on that land now and would not have a chance to be absorbed into the soil that is now there. Now, that type of an argument probably has a lot of holes in it, but perhaps somebody could put some clarification on that.
Sure. I'll actually, since you're a mathematician, I'll give you a math answer, and then you can go home and you can figure it out yourself. And if you have any questions, you can come back to me. But really, when we talk about how much runoff we have, we assign a curve number. And so if it was perfectly impermeable, then that number would be 100. And those are assigned to all the sites. So any of the roof, the paving, and so on, it would be assigned a number of 100. On the other hand, if it was perfectly permeable, took all the water, the number would be 0. But the reality is it's not – it's very difficult, of course, to get that unless you have zero discharge. So when you look at a farm field farmed in a minimum tillage type situation, the curve number for that is 78 on what we call normal hydrologic conditions. The paving itself has what we have a curve number of 98, but when we convert it to lawn, then it goes down to 60. And if we have areas of prairie, you can take that number, and again, there's some judgment involved in that, but you can take that number down to 30. And so when you combine all those percentages of a lot, because typically a large 1 acre lot doesn't have much more than, it'd be unusual to be more than 25% impermeable. If you run all those numbers together, then the end of the at the end of the day, your subdivision as a whole should have a curve number in around 60 to 65, based on the prairie grass, the mowed grass, and then the houses impermeable paving and whatnot.
Take me through a regular farm field. I think you said 78.
78.
Is that because it's tiled and the farmer's trying to get the water off the crops as fast as possible, or why would that be higher than just a regular yard?
Typically, you can look at it as a sponge, and the sponge only has so much capacity in it, and the tile actually, in some ways, increases the capacity of the sponge, but really the sponge is such that it only holds so much water in a farm condition. When you put grass in there, then it really slows the drainage down, makes it gives it more time to infiltrate into the ground and fill up the sponge.
Okay.
So it's very similar to what we try to talk about to farmers and so forth when we talk about buffers and things in that area in order to be
right.
able to slow down water and erosion.
Right. And as you know, I was very specific in my language when I said this. And I said in the minimum tillage, no tillage thing, you have a curve number of 78. But if you did conventional tillage where you're tilling and maybe compacting the ground a little bit more, you'd be down to maybe 72. So there's always some judgment in there.
Okay. Well, that's satisfactory, at least for the time being. And I look forward to arranging time with you to come up. Thank you.
I gave him my card so he can help.
Great.
Scott, thank you
great.
Very much.
We appreciate that.
Nope. I think we're good.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll go back and separate these. The first item on our agenda is to consider the development agreement for Cameron Estates, and that would be the first motion that we would need.
I would move approval.
And I'll second.
Got a motion and a second to approve the development agreement. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Aye. That development agreement has been approved. The second item we need to consider is Resolution 1502, and that's the final subdivision plat of Cameron Estates.
So move.
And I'll second.
Motion and a second. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Aye. That resolution has been approved. And I think that's about it. Takes us down to liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne?
No liaison assignment yesterday due to our meeting up in Zeering and so forth. Committee assignments yesterday, the Central Iowa Community Service Board did meet. Obviously, we were interrupted with the tornado warning, and we were scheduled to start at 1 o'clock, and many of our members just made it in time for us to move to the basement area until we received an all clear from that. But then in the meeting, it was quite lengthy. A lot of things were accomplished. First of all, I had mentioned earlier that one of the proud moments again for me was to see that Deb Schulroth, RCPC, that spoke earlier, was elected by the admin team to serve as chair of that organization and will be the CEO for this upcoming year, which will be our voice directly with DHS regarding the mental health regional service delivery. And Jody Eden was elected as vice chair and secretary, and Jody has been very prominent in keeping us addressed as far as the minutes and notes and so forth. So I feel very confident that the outstanding leadership that we had in the this past year will be continued with both Deb and Jody providing leadership to our admin team. And then there were a couple key things dealing with the Finance Committee recommendations, I think that was extremely very important, dealing with fiscal matters and how everything would be accounted for. And then one of the important things that I think is worth noting is that there was a recommendation that was approved that authorized individual county boards of supervisors to approve claims up to the budget amount that we currently have in Fund 10. And this is going to be take us through FY15 and down the road, even though we're talking about mental health dollars expenditures, there are things that individual counties believe that because of their fund balance and where they are in this transition, that to not have this authority to approve these claims just slows down the entire process. We discussed how the region will be updated. There will be a spreadsheet. That information will be then reviewed by the admin team and so forth. So there will be another tracking and accounting of those particular funds. But I think all of the counties felt real good about, you know, our ability to continue to approve these necessary claims that are in the county's fund, Fund 10. So we had a unanimous consent on the part of all the counties represented. And then they just talked about some of the other things, how they will go about the protocol for approving claims and how the fiscal agents will play a key role in that. And this was something that I think will pay big dividends for us in the future, because the county, there is a move by the state legislature, as you know, to put a limit on 25% for ending fund balances. Well, we know several counties have higher than 25% fund balances right now. It wasn't determined whether that becomes the responsibility of the region or the individual counties. So there will be continual dialogue over this next year in terms of how all of this is basically going to play out. But I think that we do have a group of individuals that can assist us, can be very helpful. Say, for example, a particular county determines that they don't have enough funds for cash flow purposes at the start of the fiscal year. There's a process in place that they can appeal to the region for additional funding so that no particular service is disrupted or interrupted. So I think they have really done an excellent job in trying to look at all the nuances of the fiscal policy and how it can not only benefit member counties but benefit the region as a whole. And then there was another proposal that did take some time, which I was very encouraged with. Deb brought this to the governing board, and they asked if they would approve our Central Iowa Community Service region as a funder, along with, as you know, United Way, the City of Ames, the county, and GSB. And after considerable discussion, they did move forward with that recommendation. However, it will not become effective until July of 15 because of the whole process that our region would have to go through in presenting that request. But it was an affirmation that several of them clearly recognized the asset program that has been in place in Story County for many years and how valuable that has been to providing the funding for the services that we have. So I think that John Grush probably made the statement best, saying here was an example of where we have a county who has had a proven track record of ability to deliver services that the region now has adopted and supported, and feel that yes, we'd like to move forward with that. So that was encouraging. So
that is encouraging.
That was basically about where we are. And then the only other thing that we will hear about later, we table, and this was a recommendation by our county assistant county attorney, is we're looking at the liability coverage for our region. And we've gotten a rate from ICAP that appears to be a little high. And
no track record.
And so we wanted to table that and get further information regarding, because one of the regions in northern Iowa, eastern Iowa, is using a different firm, and they are actually coming in with much lower liability coverage rates. So we'll hear more about that a little bit later. Okay. But other than that, that's about it.
Pass.
Pass also. Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on these items due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Not seeing anybody moving towards the mic. Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne.
Okay, pass.
Pass.
Board of Health this afternoon at 2 o'clock right here if anybody's interested.
Okay.
Move adjournment.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.